This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to What Makes It Great. I am David Ozenberg. This is our fourth season of broadcasting this very popular series as hosted by composer, conductor, author, and commentator Rob Capello. For over 20 years, Rob has brought the joy and wonder of classical music and unraveling some of its mysteries to audiences of all ages and backgrounds. One of the greatest communicators since Leonard Bernstein, Rob's programs are characterized by his unique ability to create that aha moment for his audiences and collaborators, whatever their level of musical sophistication or naivete. Rob's work brings music into people's lives, opening new ears to musical experiences and helping people to listen actively rather than just hear. Rob's range of activities is astonishingly broad, including his What Makes It Great presentations, now going on for over 20 years in New York and Boston, his family compositions and family music events, his city pieces, corporate programs, and residencies with institutions as diverse as the National Gallery of Canada and Stanford University. The reach of his interactive events and activities is wide, from Native American tribal communities in Montana and inner-city high school students in Louisiana to audiences in Kyoto and Kuala Lumpur, and from little ones barely out of diapers to musicologists in Ivy League programs. His career has been marked by numerous major awards and grants. He won first prize in the Fontainebleau Casa des Sceaux piano competition and was second prize winner of the Entel Dorati Conductors competition with the Detroit Symphony. He's also been a recipient of an Exxon Meet the Composer grant and numerous ASCAP awards. He's conducted many of North America's orchestras, as well as new works of musical theater, ranging from the Tony Award-winning Nine on Broadway to the premiere of Frida for the opening of the Brooklyn Academy of Music's Next Wave Festival. At 19, Rob interrupted his academic work at Yale University to study with the legendary Nadia Boulanger. 2 years later, after graduating Phi Beta Kappa from Yale, he continued his studies at Eastman School of Music. After graduating from Eastman, he returned to Yale, where he was assistant professor for 6 years at the university. He dedicates his summer months to writing and composing new music. He was the first composer to be granted the rights to set Dr. Seuss's words to music, and his Green Eggs and Ham has been called the most successful piece written for families this half century. There's a CD featuring Nathan Gunn and Isabel Leonard in two of his most popular family music compositions, Chris von Alsberg's Polar Express and Dr. Seuss's Gertrude McFuzz. He's appeared on the NBC Today Show. He's presented a special What Makes It Great for broadcast on PBS's Live from Lincoln Center. And he's written two books, the award-winning All You Have to Do Is Listen and What Makes It Great, the first book of its kind to be especially designed for the iPad with embedded musical examples. His latest project is a new book on the American Songbook. Rob's special guests on this program, which was recorded at Merkin Concert Hall back on October 22nd, were the 2018 recipients and first international ensemble chosen for the Cleveland Quartet Award from Chamber Music America. They were formed back at the Banff Center for Arts. In 2013, the Canadian ensemble, the Ralston String Quartet. Lurey Lee and Emily Crespi violin, Hezekiah Leung viola, and Jonathan Lowe on cello. They're a multi-award-winning quartet, and they began a 2-year term as Yale School of Music's Fellowship Quartet in Residence in the fall of 2017. They've already served as quartet in residence at Houston's Rice University's Shepherd School of Music, and have been in residencies at major festivals across the globe. They've worked and collaborated with some of today's top artists and young composers. And they are joined by award-winning double bassist Sam Suggs, who's collaborated with many top ensembles, such as Mostly Mozart Festival, Yellow Barn, Chamber Music Northwest, Chamber Music Lincoln Center. This Buffalo, New York native was a 2017 Extraordinary Creativity Award winner at the Breditich Foundation International Double Bass Competition. These five string players will perform well-known music of Mozart, and I take you now to the stage of Merkin Concert Hall at the Kauffman Music Center in Midtown Manhattan, just back on October 22nd, and your host, Rob Capello.
Good evening and welcome to our fifth season of What Makes It Great here at Merkin Hall. We've got an incredibly varied season in store for you, beginning tonight with Mozart's classic, Eine kleine Nachtmusik. Next month, we explore Dvorak's most famous piece of chamber music, his American String Quartet. Then in January, we'll have a full symphony orchestra here on stage for Schubert's iconic musical masterpiece, his unfinished symphony. Then in February, we change gears completely for You're the Top, the Songs of Cole Porter, which I'm sad to say is already sold out. Sorry. Then we finish the season in March with Jazz on the Tracks, a unique program featuring Kyle Athade's brilliant 16-piece big band on stage for a mini tour through big band jazz of the 20th century, looked at through the prism of railroad-inspired jazz classics. I'll explain what that means in March, you'll understand. From Glenn Miller's Chattanooga Choo Choo, Duke Ellington's Happy Go Lucky Local, Count Basie's Super Chief, all the way through to Thelonious Monk's Little Rudy Tootie, and finally, how's this for the perfect final piece of a season, Caboose, from Wynton Marsalis's 1999 suite, Big Train. It should be a fantastic season, and attendance is mandatory at all five programs if you want to have any hope of passing the final exam. Do we have any newcomers coming to one of these What Makes a Great Program for the first time? Oh, okay, good. Very quickly, for newcomers and for our radio audience, programs divided up into three parts: discussion, demonstration, approximately 60 minutes, intermission, complete performance, followed immediately by a short question and answer session with myself and all of our musicians, where you can ask anything you like about the program, Mozart, music in general, and in fact, since our quartet is Canadian, feel free to ask their opinions on legalized marijuana. The Q&A is one of the most fun parts of the program, so I hope you'll stay till the end. And as always, the entire concert is being taped for broadcast on WWFM, including the Q&A, so make sure your questions are brilliant. Now, I want to get started by looking very quickly at the historical facts surrounding this piece, and I thought that rather than trying to explain the complex, intricate scholarship myself, I would communicate by just quoting directly from Maynard Solomon's definitive Mozart biography. So here's Solomon on the origins of Eine kleine Nacht music. He writes, quote, "Between March and August of 1787, Mozart produced a substantial quantity of instrumental music, including the serenade in G, Eine kleine Nacht music. The sources of the commissions for these works or the occasions for their performance are not known." That's it. No one knows anything. And the reason no one knows is that no one, Mozart included, ever dreamed that more than 200 years later, people would still be playing this music. In 1757, the critic Friedrich Marburg wrote, quote, "A serenade, like much other music of the period, was only performed once." In the case of Eine kleine Nacht music, he could not have been more wrong. Though it's true that in general, serenades were social music designed for immediate consumption, Mozart's serenade, Eine kleine Nacht music, literally a short Eine kleine serenade Nacht music, has become one of the most frequently performed pieces of music ever written, heard everywhere these days, not only in concert halls and on CDs, but also in television commercials, film scores, elevators, and even on cell phone ringtones. I wasn't sure that was gonna work. But what makes the serenade so great? In a quotation that always comes to mind for me when I think of Mozart, the brilliant Czech writer Milan Kundera, talking about the novel as a literary genre, writes, quote, "The novel's spirit is the spirit of complexity. Every great novel says to the reader, things are not as simple as you think." And the same can be said of Mozart's music. No matter how simple it seems, things are never as simple as you think. Mozart's music is never as symmetrical, conventional, or regular as it appears to be, but it can take close listening to notice the subtle irregularities and the hidden asymmetries that make this music so great. And since close listening is what this whole series is all about, let's get started. Now, I want to begin by having the quintet play you just the first 27 measures of this piece. Imagine that you're casually listening on a beautiful summer night to some pleasant background music. For the last time tonight, I'd like you to sit back, relax, and enjoy yourself. Then we will go back and take this opening apart to within an inch of its life to see what makes it tick and what makes it great. Here are the opening 27 measures of Eine kleine Nacht music. Thank you. sound fantastic? Yeah? One of the amazing things about Mozart is the pace of invention, the speed of the musical thought. Let's learn this famous opening together. The opening idea begins with a single note. Not great. I sing, you copy. Bum, B-U-M is what it says in the manuscript. Bum. Good. Immediately has a lower note to make a pair like this. I sing, you copy. Bum, bum. Let's put three of those pairs together. I sing, you copy. Bum, 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 bum. Go. All right, now let's make a sentence by giving this whole combination a rhythm. So what do you got? You've got a note, you've got a pair, you've got three pairs. Now I'll give it a rhythm, you copy. Bum, 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 bum. Sing. But of course, it's a surprise at the end that makes it great. Sing our almost Mozart version one more time. Ready, sing. Now listen for the surprise at the end and raise your eyebrows when it happens. Good. Now, the minute you've got a melody, you've also got a rhythm. I want you to clap what you just sang, but don't sing it. So sing it in your head, but just clap the rhythm. Ready, go. And the minute you have a rhythm, you can use that same rhythm with different notes for the second half of the idea. I play what comes next. As soon as I finish, you clap the rhythm I played. Clap. Same rhythm with completely different notes. And the two ideas connect through their rhythm, like two lines of rhyming poetry that connect through their rhythm, though the words are different. Now, once you've got a great opening idea like this, you want the listener to focus on it without any distraction. Mozart could easily have put the melody over here with some pointless, distracting chords over here. He didn't, but I did. So here's Mozart's melody over here with some pointless, distracting chords that I wrote. Oh, he not only does cell phone, but also pointless, distracting chords. Here we go. I told them to smile appropriately, and I thought they did an excellent job. But to focus your attention on that idea right away from the first note, he has all the instruments play the melody in unison so there can be no distraction. Listen to the focus of his version, not this, but everyone in unison like this. Look for almost 10 minutes at the next 10 seconds of music. Because if you can really hear all the fantastic things that are going on in these four measures of music, you'll be able to hear the same kinds of things going on everywhere in Mozart. These measures are Mozart in microcosm, so listen closely. Let's start by looking behind the scenes, so to speak, not at the melody, but the accompaniment, the chords underneath the melody. Like most Mozart pieces, this one has a steady beat that you could tap your foot to that goes about bum, 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 bum. Give you a feel for that beat. I want you to count from 1 to 8 and say stop in the tempo of the piece like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, stop. Ready, go.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, stop.
You know, Boulanger always used to say if you couldn't count from 1 to 8 like it was the most exciting event in your life, you had no business being alive. So I want you to count from 1 to 8 like each step. 1, 2, you're kidding. 3, no way. 4, 5, 1 to 8, and then stop with life. Ready, go. 1, you're kidding. What?
6, 7, 8,
fantastic. Now, Mozart could have had the accompaniment play one note for each of those counts like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, stop. I want you to count from 1 to 8 and say stop out loud and do one clap per beat like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, stop. Let's try that. Ready, go. Fantastic. Now, Mozart could have had the melody over here and had the accompaniment plodding along with one per beat. What I want you to get is I'm not changing a single note of Mozart. All I'm changing is the rhythm. And listen to how awful this sounds. The melody's over here. They're playing one per beat, all Mozart's notes. All I've changed is the rhythm. Kind of a beer hall polka-like effect. I think they really committed themselves admirably to that version. All right, now to make things a little better, a little more exciting, we could speed up the accompaniment from 1 per beat, 1, 2, 3, 4, to 2 per beat, 1, 2, 3, 4. So not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, stop, but 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. five, six, seven, eight, stop. So now I want you to count from one to eight and say stop, but now do two claps per beat. Not one, two, but one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, stop to the end. Here we go. Say it out loud, count two per beat. Ready, clap. Yeah, now do it like very Mozartian, like a little wig, you know, oh, one, two, three. A little more elegant. Here we go. Ready? Yes. Excellent. Six, seven, eight. Now listen to how much better this sounds. We haven't changed a note. The melody is identical. They're playing the exact same notes. The only difference is instead of this, they're playing this. And listen to how much better it sounds. Now, if you listen casually, you might well think that this was actually Mozart's version. But if it were, we wouldn't be talking about it today. You know, I was very lucky. I spent 6 months when Michael Eisner was the CEO of the Disney Company working on a project with him. And one of the things he always used to say over and over again at meetings was, good companies meet customer expectations. Great companies exceed customer expectations. What you just heard was a version that met customer expectations. It wasn't terrible. Let's see if we can exceed customer expectations and turn it into Mozart. All right, we've tried one per beat. One, two, three, four. We've tried two per beat. One, two, three, four. Let's try to go wild and do four per beat. One, but since that hurts my arms, we're going to do it like this. So count from one to eight, say stop, do four per beat on your legs. Here we go. Ready, go. Two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, stop. And you just learned a valuable lesson about ensemble playing. If you finish together, no one knows what happened in the middle. Now, what makes Mozart's version so great is that while the melody is over here, and most of them are playing two per beat, one instrument is playing four per beat. And that's what makes the entire texture sparkle. That's the difference between a good company that just meets expectations and one that exceeds expectations. And I want you to tell me who it is. So our instruments are first violin, second violin, double bass, viola, cello, and you tell me who's playing four per beat. I'll do the claps. Was it him? Was it him? Him? Well, are you related to him? Okay, good. Was it her?
Yes.
Yes. Stand up, bravo, big moment. Yes. Emily has been waiting all her life for this moment. All right, let's do this one more time, and I really want you to hear. Everyone else is playing bum, 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 bum. He did look very fast in the double bass. Don't feel badly about your answer. But she's going, and that's what makes the entire texture sparkle. Listen to it again. Here we go. Give her a hand, yes. However, balance is everything. If everybody played four per beat, it would sound grotesque. Listen to everyone playing four per beat. Don't try that one at home. Okay, good. Now that's what makes the accompaniment great. Now let's take a look at the melody, and let's build this up from ordinary to great, step by step. Let's start with what I would call a Salieri version. That's almost Mozart, but has an annoying... Is there someone here from the Salieri Foundation? I've just offended now? Okay. But has an annoying repeated note at the beginning of each measure. A repeat, next measure, repeat, next measure, repeat, next measure, repeat. So this is almost Mozart, but with an annoying repeated note at the beginning of each measure, like this. Repeat. Repeat, repeat, repeat. She committed very well visually to that example. All right, so how are we going to make this better? Let's say to make it slightly better, we decided to decorate that annoying second repeat with the note above it, a little leaning note that we call an appoggiatura. Just say appoggiatura. It's a very useful word for cocktail parties. The way the Ralstons played those appoggiaturas, it was just exquisite. Okay, appoggiatura. Now, when you hear the first appoggiatura, you'll be delighted. I mean, at least it's not repeat all over again. Repeat, Ah, the first appoggiatura sounds great, but how quickly innovation fades. The second appoggiatura will be annoying, and the third one will be intolerable. So here's repeat plus three appoggiaturas, and I want you to watch how you listen. The first one is varied, and it sounds great. Second one annoying, third one intolerable. Here we go. Repeat. First. Nice. Third. You know, I've got to bring her along with me everywhere. She's a fantastic demonstrator. All right, so let's review what we're going to do next. We started off with repeat like this, which we initially copied with another repeat, which we made better as an appoggiatura. An even fancier innovation alternates the two notes quickly and turns it into trill. Oh, fantastic idea. Now, trill initially sounds even better than appoggiatura ever did, but it quickly becomes even more annoying than repeat or appoggiatura ever was. So here's repeat plus three trills. And again, how quickly innovation fades, the lesson that BlackBerry never learned. First, nice. All right, so what makes Mozart's version so great is that he continually varies the versions, and I want you to tell me what he does. So I'm going to hold my fingers up at the three places, the three downbeats, and it could either be repeat, it either could be appoggiatura, or it could be trill. I will tell you that we start off with repeat. Then I'll hold up my three fingers at the three places, and when the passage is over, you'll tell me what Mozart did. All right, so we started with repeat. What came next? What came next? What came next? And how many people got it wrong and feeling badly about themselves right now? Would you like it again? One more time. Repeat. Trill. Appoggiatura. Trill. Got it? The answer is yes if you want to get out of here before Thanksgiving. Okay, good. There's still one more fantastic thing. Violas have a reputation for having really, really boring parts in the classical period, and a boring part would fit perfectly here. So I wrote a boring part, and I want you to just raise your hand when you're bored. And you can't do it, though, before he starts playing. Okay. And by bored, I mean you hear the pattern, you get the pattern, you're sure you know what comes next, and then sadly, that's what comes next. There's nothing sadder in life than knowing what comes next. And that's what comes next. So here's the boring version. Feel free, he won't be insulted. Raise your hand when you're bored. What a surprise. Good. Now, just at the moment where it could become boring, however, Mozart changes the part. So raise your hand at the two interesting moments. If you miss it the first time, you'll probably get it the second time. And the amazing thing about it is those five surprising notes are then played by the first violin an octave higher one note later, and they make a little round like row, row, row your boat. We'll put just those two parts together and see if you can hear the round on those five surprising notes just where it would otherwise have been boring. Got it? Now we're going to put this together, and hopefully you're going to hear everything in these four fantastic measures. So I want to make sure you hear it all. Now, what are you listening for? You're listening for the continuously innovating first violin who is playing repeat, then what else? Trill, appoggiatura. You're listening to the great moment in Emily's life where she goes wild playing four notes per beat. You're listening to the much mocked viola part, which now provides us with these five interesting notes that he plays in a little round with the first violin, and everything is held together and grounded by the sturdy, steady, repeated, reliable, repeated notes of the cello and bass, the glue of it all, the ensemble's equivalent to the accounting department. Okay. So now, see? That just came to me on the spur of the moment. But now, the most important thing is see if you can actually hear all that. Really hear trill, repoggiatura, one, two, three, round here. Boom, 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 boom. See if you can really hear it all. This is what makes Mozart Mozart. Here we go. ¶¶ Could you hear it all? Do you want it a second time? I told them if you didn't say yes, we had failed. The whole evening depended on you saying you wanted to hear it a second time. Because that's what this evening is all about. There's so much going on in this music. Even though the surface sounds simple, there's all this richness going on beneath it. One more time, see if you can hear it all. I know you think I stacked the deck by picking. You can always applaud them. I know you think I stacked the deck by picking like the incredibly four best bars in the piece. I could have done this with any four bars in the piece. Now, the reason I spent so long in this example is that once you have a feel for this kind of writing here, you'll find it everywhere in Mozart. Though the surface of this music might sound simple, if you listen closely, there's always something unexpected going on. As Kundera says, things are never as simple as you think. For example, in classical period music, like rhyming poetry, even numbered units, 4 and 8 are regular, but great music, like great poetry, is often subtly irregular. Let's say a lesser poet than Robert Frost had written his great poem, Fire and Ice. It might have been all regular, predictable, 4-beat lines. Da-da-ba-dum-ba-dum-ba-dum, ba-dum-ba-dum-ba-dum-ba-dum. It could have been, some say the world will end in fire, 4. Some say the world will end in ice, 4. From what I've tasted of desire, 4. I hold with those who favor fire. 4. Ba-dum-ba-dum-ba-dum-ba-da, a Hallmark greeting card. Anyone here from Hallmark who I've now just... no, good. I'll tell you a funny story about Hallmark in the Q&A if you want to know. Good. But instead of some say the world will end in fire, 4. Some say the world will end in ice, 4. He does some say the world will end in fire, 4. Some say in ice, 2. So already you have that beautiful 4-2. Now, once you have 4-2, you have the possibility of a pattern. You're now on the edge of your seat, wondering what's going to come next, 4 or 2. So be on the edge of your seat, so one more time. Some say the world will end in fire, 4. Some say in ice, 2. From what I've tasted of desire, 4. Now, we did 4-2. We just did 4. What would likely come next? 2. I favor fire. But that's not what he writes. He writes, from what I've tasted of desire, 4. I hold with those who favor fire. So you have 4-2-4-4. So now you've got two possibilities. Every time you hear a 4, you don't know whether it's going to be a 2 next or a 4 next. But if it had to perish twice, 4, I think I know enough of hate, 4, to say that 4 destruction, ice, 4, 3 4s, surely we're just going to have one more 4 and we're done, is also great, 2, and would suffice, 2. Constantly surprising at every moment. Similarly, the next phrase of music in Mozart starts with a regular 4-measure unit, and it starts to repeat, but the repeat is chopped off after 3 measures by a surprise accent, and that surprise accent is repeated once, not twice, making the non-accent a real event. So here's the next phrase. You'll hear 4 bars, repeat, 3 bars, whoops, accent repeated once, not twice. Mozart. 1, 2. 3, 4, repeat, 1, 2, 3, but accent, repeat accent, no accent. It's these wonderful irregularities that give Mozart's themes such life and personality and make the difference in his operas between flat cardboard stereotypes and living, breathing human beings. If I change one rhythm in this movement's second theme, it completely loses all personality. Here are all Mozart's notes, but one obnoxious rhythm on my part, an annoying buh-da-buh-da-buh starting every other measure. Every single note here is Mozart. All I've done is written one different rhythm at the beginning of the first and third measure, buh-da-buh-da-buh, like this. Mozart. Me. So my version began with 5 boring even notes like this. La 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 la, sing la 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 la, as boring as you possibly can. Ready, go. No, I mean like your teenage daughter rolling her eyes like you're the dumbest person she ever met. We go, ready, go. All I'm gonna do now is change the rhythm and it becomes Mozart. La. Try that, ready, go. A little neck movement helps a little bit. One more time, ready, and la. The exact same notes. So instead of my boring, dull version, la, 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 Mozart. And again, they come in late. The accounting department, she takes over. She says, no way. The possibilities that Mozart can hear in the tiniest detail are truly amazing. There's only one other idea in this movement, and it couldn't be less interesting. Here's the only other idea in the movement. All right, now that's definitely not genius. Let's look closely at this idea like a composer. All right, it's made up of two fragments. We'll call it fragment one and fragment two. All right, let's see what these two fragments have in common. First of all, I'm going to play fragment one. I want to tell me how many notes are in fragment one, how many different attacks. Feel free to count on your fingers. Here's fragment one. How many notes? There was a six, there was a seven. One more time, I'll do it slower. How many notes?
Seven.
Okay, let's look at fragment two. How many notes in fragment two? Seven. Okay, so they've got seven notes in common. Now, are there any actual notes that they have in common? I'll try not to give it away. Here's fragment one. Here's fragment two. Any notes they have in common? Okay, so we've got seven notes for both fragments, and we have the last two notes, which we will call dida. It's important you learn this technical vocabulary. Dida. So they got seven notes each, and they've got dida in common. All right, let's look at the history of the relationship between these two fragments and see how the couple gets along. All right. One other thing. Let's look a little closer at the individual profile before we get to their history. The first one starts with, I'll do it in a register you can sing, with a leap up, then a scale down, and then dida. So I want you to sing once slowly and really get the shape. Leap up, scale down, dida. One more time. Leap up, scale down. Now do it at tempo like this. Leap up, scale down, dida. Ready, go. All right, now how many times do I repeat the same note before we get to dida in the second phrase? How many times? Five. So we're going to call this one 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, dida. Sing that.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5,
and now sing it at tempo. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, dida.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5,
now putting the two together, we've got leap up, scale down, dida. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, dida. Ready, go. All right, so now we've got the two shapes. They each have their own independent identity. Fragment one is always a leap up, scale down, dida. Fragment two, independent identity, five repeated notes. Let's follow out the history of the relationship. Okay, so we start off, everything is fine. They're happy, independent lives. Leap up, scale down, dida. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, dida. Everything's going well, we repeat the same thing again. Leap up, scale down, dida. That's how you know something's an idea in Mozart. You repeat it once. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, dida. Raise your hand when you hear the first crack in the relationship. Aha. All right. But the shape is still the same. Leap up, scale down, dida. And still, fragment two responds with five repeated notes. They're different repeated notes, but the same shape. 1, 2, 3. Now, like all relationships, they grow and develop. So we now transpose, which simply means repeat the idea starting a different note. Sometimes the leaps are different distances. Sometimes they start on different notes, but they still keep their identities. That's the key. It's still always a leap up, scale down, dida, and five repeated notes. See if you can follow it. Leap up, scale down, dida. Still fragment two has the same identity. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We do it lower again, keeping the identity. Leap up, scale down, dida. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now, fragment one has a midlife crisis and loses its fundamental identity. Instead of being a leap up and a scale down to dida, he becomes a rising scale. A rising scale to, and all that's left is dida. The only thing holding the fragments together is dida, the children. Okay. Fragment two tries to change with fragment one and become a rising scale to dida, but you can hear in the dissonant intervals how difficult this is. A rising scale to t. All that's holding them together, they've lost the independent identities, is dida. They try one more time to become a rising scale to dida for the sake of the children. A rising scale to t. But now watch what happens instead. The death of Dita, it's gone. There's nothing left holding them together. And then on the brink of ultimate disintegration, they somehow find a way to go on, and two thrilling measures bring them back home, save the marriage, and we return to the opening idea. Now, this all happens in 30 seconds out of those two ideas, leap up, scale down, Dita, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Dita. Who but Mozart could have created this incredible dialogue out of that simple idea? See if you can follow it now in real time. Here we go. Leap up, scale down, Dita. They're happy. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Dita. Leap up, scale down, Dita. First crack. Leap up, scale down, Dita. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Dita. Lower. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Dita. Leap up, scale down, Dita. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Midlife crisis. To Dita. There's nothing left but Dita. There's nothing left. It's gone. But somehow, they're back. Got it? Good. Though we're back where we started, the surprises last till the end of the movement. The first half of the movement ended with a lyrical measure followed by three short chords, like this. Three short chords. The same music comes back lower to end the movement. An exact copy would have that same lyrical measure followed by three short chords, like this. Though we get the lyrical measure, the second measure, instead of three short chords, becomes what my Jewish grandmother called a kvetch, a complaint. So instead of lyrical measure, three short chords, we get lyrical measure, kvetch, like this. I hate my job, I hate my job. But when the idea repeats, we change that second measure again. We still get the lyrical measure, but now it's not lyrical measure, three short chords, not lyrical measure, kvetch, but lyrical measure, float to the heavens, like this. Float. Three soft chords should have ended the movement like this. But instead, a loud second chord surprises us and leads to the ending like this. Repeat. New lower parts and one dotted rhythm. One dotted rhythm, bum bum bum, the only dotted rhythm, bum bum bum, in the entire movement, save to make the ending special. Now you can clap. Okay, you've done the hard work of the evening. Now just a few points on the remaining three movements. Originally, the term serenade referred to evening music, the song of a lover beneath his lady's window. And the second movement, Romanza, is a perfect example. You have to imagine Don Giovanni serenading one of his lady loves beneath her balcony window. Who could resist music like this? She starts as an accompaniment, doubles the melody, this dot. First one bass note, then three, and a cadence. Repeat fuller, add viola, great trill in the viola, and an ending. How many of you have read Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Tipping Point? Anyone read that book? It has a wonderful subtitle, How Little Things Make a Big Difference. And there's no composer that this is more true of than Mozart. Details are everything here. Now, as you've just heard, the first violin melody begins with the same note repeated three times, with the cello coming in underneath on that third note with a C. You don't have to know what a C is, just get the sound in your ear and think of C as a label. So here's the first three notes of the melody, with the cello coming in and the bass on the third note with a C. Get the sound in your ear. But when the melody returns identically a few moments later, the cello changes and enters on a different note on an A. Listen to the magical sound when it changes the note under the third one. And it's not only this one cello note that changes. Listen to that whole melody one more time the first time and pay attention to the cello and the bass line underneath. All C's. Now listen to how different that exact same melody note sounds when we put a different cello line underneath. And though this version ultimately ends the exact same way as the first phrase with this, the four preceding beats are completely different. The first time went like this, and then came to that ending. But now this time, instead of this, we do this. Mozart never repeats exactly where new possibilities can be found, and Mozart hears possibilities everywhere. Ezra Pound defines genius, and I've mentioned this before, as the capacity to see 10 things where the ordinary man sees one. And that's a perfect description of Mozart's kind of genius. The entire middle section of this movement grows out of one of the most inauspicious musical ideas imaginable. A tiny little figure in the first violin like this, imitated by the cello. Who but Mozart could possibly have created an entire dramatic dialogue out of such an incredibly simple idea? Now, we start off with our partners in this dialogue, first violin and the cello and the bass, in complete agreement, answering each other with the exact same notes, like this. She begins. Same notes. Same notes. She changes the third note. Takes us in a new direction. She begins in the new place. He disagrees and answers higher. She agrees. He raises the stakes even higher. She agrees, but complains. They interrupt. Now we're in a standoff. Violin here, cello here. Violin here, cello here. Violin here. But gradually, she gives in for the sake of the children. And we're back. Though serenades and divertimentos like Eine kleine Nachtmusik are in general happy, sunny pieces, nearly all of Mozart's mature works contain passages where we seem to peer into the abyss for a moment, where we step aside from the elegant, aristocratic world that the music normally inhabits and get a brief glimpse of the darker side of things. These striking moments, like the passage you just heard, are often brief, but somehow their effect lingers. Maynard Solomon, the biographer who I mentioned earlier, has a wonderful term for these passages, and I mentioned this in our G minor symphony program. He calls these passages trouble in paradise. And when the passage you just heard, trouble, returns to the opening theme, paradise, as it were, there's an enormous sense of relief. We somehow temporarily left pain and confusion behind. But paradise once lost can never be completely regained, and a relationship once broken can never truly be repaired. The shadow that these moments cast lingers over the rest of the movement, and Mozart searches for peace, resolution, and closure until the final note. Let me show you how it works. You remember those opening three violin notes with the cello coming in first on what note? C. Here was the first version, coming in on a C. What did it come in on the second time? Get that in your ear. The final time, the cello enters with the bass magically on yet a third note, this time on a G. Listen to the piece of this version, which causes the melody to change from to this beautiful new higher version. Here's the exquisite ending of the movement. Remember, this, first time, second time, now. Change, second. Lovely, isn't it? If you listen to almost any piece from the classical period, you're likely to hear a minuet and trio. The minuet and trio is the closest the classical period comes to a fixed form. Like a sonnet or haiku, the externals of the form are fixed and the audiences knew what to expect. They expected to hear a movement with three beats to a measure and three overall sections. The first section, called the minuet, would be in two parts, with both parts repeated. The middle section, called the trio, would be in two parts, both parts repeated. Then we go back and replay the minuet without repeats. Minuet, trio, minuet, ABA for short. Like a movie in which the rules of the genre are clear, and we know how things are going to turn out in the big picture, the couple that hates each other at the beginning of the movie is going to fall in love by the end of the movie. When we know how things are going to turn out in the big picture, the focus shifts to the small picture, to details, to how it's done. And the details in this minuet are absolutely exquisite. Here's the first part of the minuet, which is immediately repeated. Repeat. Let me show you some of the wonderful subtleties in this opening. Again, how little things make a big difference. The opening idea begins with five even march-like notes that we could just call one, two, three, four, five, like this, which you could easily have balanced with five more even march-like notes like this. But instead, Mozart creates a flurry of notes to sweep us into the return of the idea. So instead of... Listen to the flurry of notes. Flurry. And we're back. Which could have ended squarely and symmetrically with five more march-like notes. I wrote this ending. However, instead, Mozart creates a totally unexpected ending. He not only changes the melody completely, he changes the fundamental three-beat feel of the minuet from 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3 to a shortened 1-2-1-2-1-2. So let's learn this together so you can really appreciate it. What Mozart does is one measure of three and then starts another one, but only for one beat. So you'll hear 1-2-3-1, but then he interrupts that with three groups of two. 1-2-1-2-1-2. So what you're going to hear is 1-2-3-1, 1-2-1-2-1-2. To make it really clear, I'll play the 1-2-3-1, and they'll play the 1-2-1-2-1-2. Here's how it goes. 1-2-3-1, 1-2-1-2-1-2. Now you try it. I'll go 1-2-3-1, and you go 1-2-1-2-1-2. Here we go. Let's try just us. 1-2-3-1, 1-2-1-2-1-2. Now do it with them. Let's do it with them. Here we go. 1-2-3-1, 1-2-1-2-1-2. All right, now listen closer. If you listen closely, you'll notice that the first two groups of 1-2-1-2 actually have trills on them. Trill 2, trill 2, but then... no trill. So it's actually trill two, trill two, no trill. See if you can hear that. Let's do it. I'll give them the 1-2-3-1. They'll do trill two, trill two, no trill. 1-2-3-1, trill two, trill two, no trill. Let's try it alone and then we'll try it with them. I'll go 1-2-3-1. You're going to go trill two, trill two, no trill. A little shaking on the trill is good. If you're the kind of person who's embarrassed to do this above the C, trill two, you can do it down here and look. Trill two, trill two, no trill. But whatever you do, there needs to be some shaking. I'll go 1-2-3-1. You go trill two, trill two, no trill. Let's try it without them. 1-2-3-1, trill two, trill two, no trill. Let's try it with them. Here we go. 1-2-3-1, trill two, trill two, no trill. Now, there's one more fantastic subtle touch that only connoisseurs like you will appreciate. The truth is, there's one more note. The ending isn't trill two, trill two, no trill. It's trill two, trill two, no trill, stop. And one instrument plays stop, and you'll tell me who it is. So what you're listening for is 1-2-3-1, trill two, no trill, stop. And that stop is what makes Mozart Mozart. Let's see if you can hear who does it. 1-2-3-1, trill two, no trill. Who had the extra note? Let's do it one more time. Cello, here we go. One more time. 1-2-3-1, trill two, no trill. I mean, that's worth the price of admission, isn't it? But now, get this. In a sense, this is the essence of Mozart. That one extra note in the cello and bass would be a witty touch and worth just doing for the momentary pleasure of it. But Mozart hears much more in that one note, because the entire bass and cello part of the trio section that follows actually comes from those last two notes of the minuet. They finished with no trill stop, and the last two notes in cello bass were an octave leap. And that octave leap transposed, that simply means started on a different note, becomes the entire bass line of the trio that follows. Octave, 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 octave. So, though you'll be forgiven for listening to the ravishingly beautiful first violin line, if you can tear yourselves away from Lurie's part, it's actually the bass and cello part going octave, octave, that comes from the last two notes of the minuet that makes Mozart Mozart. Hearing so much in so little. Things are never as simple as you think. So this little, here's the beginning of the trio, the middle section of the movement. The last movement of Eine kleine Nachtmusik is fantastic to listen to, but incredibly difficult to play. The main idea of the movement is filled with these wonderful little touches, little propulsive turns in the first violin part that occur in unexpected places, and a fantastic accompaniment that features a high-speed descending scale midway through that to me always sounds like Mozart laughing. So listen for all these tiny touches. I'll point them out as they occur, and it repeats so you get to enjoy it twice. The scale. A turn one more. I'm going to use the one other main tune of this movement as your final chance of the evening to hear the kind of details that make Mozart so superb. How little things make a big difference. Let me contrast ordinary and great for you, note by note and measure by measure. Now, the idea that we're going to look at begins with a long note followed by five short ones, what I'm going to call long 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And since all the instruments play the short notes together, they could have also played the long note together, and the whole idea could have been played at one dynamic level, soft or piano. So here's long 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the instruments playing together, all soft, like this. I want you to try it. You're just going to go long, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. First without them, and then we'll try it once with them. Here we go. Ready? Go. Long, 1, 2, 3, 4. The long note is exactly twice as long as the short one. Long, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Here we go. Ready? Go.
Long, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Good. Now, but what Mozart does is he staggers the beginnings so that the first violin enters alone, then the other instruments come in, and there's an accent on each group's entry, which is immediately followed by a surprising shift to piano. So instead of long 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, what you're gonna get is long, long 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Here's Mozart's version. Now I want you to try that. So we're gonna divide you up in half. This side is the first violin part. From you over is the second part. This side is gonna go long. Let me try you. Ready? Go.
Long.
You got to be together on the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's long. It's exactly twice as long. Ready? Go.
Long.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now you guys are going to come in one beat later, and it's going to be rest. Long. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So the idea is we're going to get long. Long. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So you're going to do rest. Long. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Let's try your part. Ready? And rest.
Long.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Pitiful. Rest. Long. One. Rest. Long. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Rest.
Long.
Now let's put it together, and you have to become an ensemble. So you have to listen for long, long, 1, 2, 3. And you have to all be together on that one, or else we'll be here all night. So it's gonna be long, long, 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's try it. Ready, go.
Long, long.
Yeah, that was like muttering. Long, long, one. Long, long, one. Here we go. Ready, and
long, long, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Let's do it with them. Here we go. Ready, go.
Long, long, 1, 2, 3.
Well, they were excellent. Okay, very good. Now, he could have easily ended this phrase boringly and symmetrically with more short notes like this. But instead, he unleashes a flurry of fast notes in the violins, wittily imitated by the viola, to bring us back to the opening stagger idea, which now adds cello and bass to it. Flurry. Flurry. Opening. And now this is the essence of Mozart's greatness. Follow it out. So we started with our stagger idea. But one, two, three, four, five. Then we did flurry. We just did stagger. What obviously should come next? Stagger, flurry, stagger, flurry. Fast notes. Something like this. But instead, he surprises us with not fast notes, and then a witty fast cello double bass ending. So here's not flurry, witty cello double bass. And here now is your final chance for the evening. How little things can make a big difference. I'm going to put all of these eight measures together. Here's the insipid version that it could have been. This is the kind of music that people who hate classical music think classical music sounds like. Now, the interesting thing, though, is that every moment, it's only a little bit different than Mozart. It's very close, but how little things can make a big difference. So here's my version, all eight measures, nothing interesting. That's it. Now, listen to Mozart's version. It's fantastic at every moment, but it's subtly fantastic. Instead of my version, it sounds long, long, one, two, three, four, five. Flurry over here, stagger over here, not flurry over here, witty cello bass at the end. Here's Mozart's version, fantastic, but subtly fantastic at every moment. Flurry, flurry, stagger, not flurry. And the surprises keep coming till the very end of the movement. What he's trying to do ultimately is get back to the opening idea one more time. But instead of starting with this, he starts too low. Fail. Then he tries it a little higher, but fails. Finally, he gets back to the right notes. Everyone in the room expects what next? And this is what makes Mozart, but instead he goes and then changes the ending to end the piece. And if you listen closely, you'll notice that the cello and the bass are imitating the first violin's ideas every step of the way. There's something amazing to listen to in Mozart until the very last note. Here's the ending of the movement. Not here, but here. Try higher. One final quick thought. In a fascinating letter to his father, Mozart described his music as, quote, a happy medium between what is too easy and too difficult. Very brilliant, pleasing to the ear, and natural without being vapid. There are passages here and there from which connoisseurs alone can derive satisfaction, but these passages are written in such a way that the less learned cannot fail to be pleased, though without knowing why. And that's really what makes this piece so great. It's both sophisticated and popular, simple and complex, and it can be appreciated on many different levels by the connoisseur and the casual listener. It's entertainment music, but it has extraordinary depth. It's a serenade, but it speaks from the heart. I know as you listen to this piece after intermission, you will, as Mozart says, quote, not fail to be pleased. I hope that after tonight's program, you will now know why. Thank you and enjoy the performance.
Rob Capello and the Ralston String Quartet, Uri Lee and Emily Crespi violin, Hezekiah Leung viola, Jonathan Lowe cello, with special guest artist double bassist Sam Suggs. And these five string players will be back in a moment with a complete performance of Mozart's evergreen serenade Eine kleine Nachtmusik, Kurzschall listing 525, and that'll be followed by a Q&A session between the audience at Merkin Concert Hall at the Kaufman Music Center in Midtown Manhattan, when this was recorded just back on October 22nd, and Rob Capello and our five string players. You're listening to What Makes It Great. This is an exclusive production of the award-winning Classical Network and WWFM.org.